Hello, you gorgeous teacher. Welcome to Everything EFL. If you're one of my lovely regular listeners, welcome back. If you're a brand new listener, you're most welcome. I hope you stick around. This week, my guest is an ESL teacher and certified special needs assistant with hands-on experience of working with students with intellectual disabilities, Veronica Rogachaya. Her current interests lie in the field of psychology of education and educating students with literacy difficulties. But today, we're talking about working memory. What is it? How can you free up your students' working memory so they can absorb and learn more? Let's find out. I'm Erin O'Byrne and welcome to Everything EFL podcast. I'm passionate about serving teachers and I offer training for schools and institutions whose language teachers need a little refresher, a change of mindset and some super practical ideas to put into their classroom straight away. There is no one-size-fits-all lesson plan, but you've got a friend and support system in me. I can help reduce your overwhelm, give you some teacher inspiration, and improve your work-life balance. How? With some solid advice, takeaways you can try out immediately, and some much-needed teacher love, because your well-being is important too. Are you ready to make small changes one step at a time and remember how amazing you are? Let's go. Veronica, welcome to Everything EFL. How are you?
Okay, Erin, thank you for having me. I'm grand. You?
Fine. Using a nice Irish expression there. So last time we met, you said some really interesting things about the brain and memory. One of the interesting things you said was that, you know, we often forget the physiological side of things when it comes to learning. And I think that as we train to be teachers and even when we do like more professional development, there's not really much focus on how the brain actually processes and learns.
It's so true. Thank you for bringing it up because it's exactly what happens at the moment. We know so much about our techniques, our approach, how to revise, how to recycle. We mentioned well-being, but we overlook the physiological side of it. And it's actually something that we should explore and know so much about, and it will help our teaching in future. So it was a good point you made about the physiological aspect of it and how important it is for us to understand how students' memories work, because they keep forgetting things. We try to teach them and they keep forgetting. We teach that again and they keep forgetting again. And surprisingly, the process is quite simple. They have ears, they have eyes, and they collect information. But where does this information go? And this is what working memory is for. A working memory is how they gather this information, stay focused, and how they process this information so that in future it could go to their long-term memory. And I think that we as educators, as teachers, need to know how it actually works and what we could do to prepare our students to process this information, because they so often look so overwhelmed with that much information we prepare for them. They don't digest it enough.
I totally agree. And I think that there should be a very large distinction between teaching and learning. Just because we teach it doesn't mean that it's being learnt.
Oh, absolutely. And we think the more materials we bring to the class, okay, at least I am like that. I think that I should be prepared with lots of games and activities and exercises. The more practice, the better. Different practice, multi-sensory activities. And I think that all will benefit the students. But at some point, usually it happens in the middle of the class, I see that they are not there. I mean, physically, they're here, but there is nobody home. Because they got, at some point, they got overwhelmed, overloaded with too much information, and they stopped responding, and they don't come back. And it's like an old computer that got heated, and so I decided to dive into this problem and try to understand how it works. And I was surprised that working memory is actually our greatest friend and greatest enemy at the same time. It does help them to learn, to stay focused, and to process information, visual, like audio, all kinds of information. But at the same time, there is a little guy inside their head, literally, and it's called the central executive. And this is the thing that tells them literally what to focus on and what to ignore. And at some point, this central executive tells them to ignore us, to ignore teachers. So when they have to choose between their first language and English, they would choose their first language because it's their comfort zone. And
Yeah, and
they
I think I remember you saying at the conference that we were at that it's not really natural for a brain to learn another language, so it's, you know, your brain is gonna tell them to ignore it. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yes, it's like a virus we're trying to
Mm.
plant inside them, and their immune system, their brain will do its best to fight it. And that actually explains why they don't remember that much vocabulary. We think it all works by the end of the class, and then the next day, like, they're blank. And the reason why it happens is that their brain erases all the new information. And guess when it happens? It doesn't happen 10 minutes after it or a couple of hours later. It happens immediately after the learning took place.
Which
And
is worrying.
yes, oh my
And I've got a
God.
lot of teachers are listening to this going, what am I even doing then?
This is scary. This is scary because it's been researched. It's not just my speculations. A lot of researchers in the field say that they forget things immediately after we try to teach them that. And okay, what can we do? What should we do?
Did you say that with lower levels, the capacity is even less as well?
Oh yes, it's a lot worse. So what happens here is that we've got working memory, students' working memory. It will not expand, it will not go bigger, it will not shrink, well, if there are no developmental issues, but it will remain the same. And the mechanism behind it is the more advanced they become, the more space in their working memory they will free up.
Mm.
When they are beginners, everything they do in your class, even when they enter the class and say hello to you, it's not automatic. And it
Right.
requires working memory to produce this language. Even opening the page 70 in their course book requires certain effort. Nothing is automatic. Things we take for granted are actually hard work for them. And that's why the more little things they have to do in your class before actual teaching starts, the more overwhelmed they will get by the end of the class. And we want to avoid it. So, my suggestion is that we should unload them where it is possible and try to provide them with little, aid and little things that will help them do things more automatically, even at lower levels.
I observed last year some teachers giving some instructions that they'd given a million times before and students didn't understand them. Is there something we can do around instruction giving that would help students unload?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, they should be very brief. They should be very short. And the best way to do that is to provide them with some visuals, some schemes. Put it on board. I always double the page number on board, even for higher levels. It's just the information they don't need to remember. It is not, it's useless. They will not need it in future that it was page 202. So put it on board so that they do not need to use their working memory to remember this instruction. The same with other instructions. It's useless to memorize the steps they will have to do. So put them on board and they can use the freed working memory space for something more useful for them. Actually produce the
Interesting.
language, yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. How else can we help our students unload?
Well, there are lots of techniques. So the one which you all will actually like is be quiet. As a teacher, the best thing you can do sometimes is just stop and give them some time, maybe a minute or two, to digest what's been taught before. Because, for example, when you explain some grammar, you reach the point when they start nodding and show their focus and how well, they understand the topic. And what happens then? Next step, you keep doing that. You keep explaining the next point. And you think, since it was successful, I can continue. But it doesn't work like this. They will not remember too, like, many positions, too many rules at once. We need to give them time.
Are you talking about like giving them a little bit of time to digest? So maybe like a brain break or just time to reflect or even just Does it work for them to sort of talk about it to their partner to process it, or is it just like, let's have 30 seconds of silent time, or both?
Both of them can work. And actually, it is a great idea to let them reflect on what's been learned with their partner, because they can clarify some points or maybe understand that they have some questions. Prepare these questions and ask you then. But definitely, we should stop teaching at some point and give them space, give their working memory time to heal, if you like, because they're traumatized with so much information.
This stuff is freaking gold. Tell me more. What else can we do?
Yeah. Well, another good the intervention is that word lists. These word lists they provide at the end of course books, and so some teachers try to use in their approach. They don't work. And again, there has been research. No word lists. The more word lists, the more overwhelmed their working memory will be, and the less effective it will be. Actually, I believe in the number 7 to 10, 7 to 10 new expressions or words learned a day. No more than that.
Yeah, otherwise it's just overload. And again, wordless, meaningless, just meaningless, decontextualized words. And, one
Absolutely.
thing I always tell my students, and I say it almost every day, is language isn't made of individual words. It's made up of groups of words and chunks.
And it's a good point. We need to give them the context. And
Yeah.
at the same time, we cannot translate words. So what I do is I bring pictures, loads of visuals, and I let them connect the visual with the word and with the context. We make up stories to create those associations. And this is another technique. We need to associate new language information with already familiar concepts that they already have in their memory, in their long-term memory. So
Yes.
the more you connect things, the more efficient their learning will be.
Absolutely. You have to connect the language to something that's already in their brain, like make it relevant. Because if the language isn't relevant, it's not meaningful. They don't see the point. So, again, that's another thing I always say to my students. We learn language by forming connections. Or, when you do the whole write sentences using the vocabulary, no, write sentences that are true for you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And keep building those bridges between what they already know and what they're about to learn. And one more thing is actually, I before our recording today, I tried it with my students and they really appreciated that. I brought my talk about working memory to them and I shared with them what I think about the very theory of it, how their working memory works. And you know what? It clarified a lot of things for them. I think it is very beneficial to let our students know what's going on, because this is actually one of the reasons why so many of them drop out in the middle, because they do not understand what's going on. They feel that they're probably stupid or they don't remember things. They are stuck. There is no progress. But the reason why it is so is that their working memory is overloaded. And it just they need to change the technique, how they learn, they need to change the approach, but nothing is going wrong. Every single person who is learning a foreign language will experience something like that at some point. If you share this information, even with your beginners, they're adults. Yeah. Yes, they're beginners in English, but they are students who are capable of understanding how it works. If they understand the mechanism, it helps them a lot to be more patient and kinder to themselves.
Yeah, I think it's also it would work very well with teenagers, depending on how you phrase it, but letting them know how the brain works, because I've seen really despondent, non-responsive sort of 15, 16-year-olds, but they're not stupid, so maybe some insight into what their brain's actually doing, they might find it interesting. And again, it might answer some questions for them. Why don't I? And also for teachers, I had a teacher saying to me the other week, but they learned it 3 weeks ago. Why can't they remember? And I was like, well, because they learned it 3 weeks ago. That's probably why they don't remember.
Oh, that's a good question to ask this teacher. How many times she actually reviewed this material learned? We expect them to be able to produce something once learned, but when I teach vocabulary, for instance, I come back to the same vocabulary 3 or 4 times during one class.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just absolutely essential to review. And you know, even if you really don't have a lot of time, if you're like a mainstream school teacher, you've got 2 50-minute lessons a week. That first 5 minutes, that first 10 minutes, it needs to be spent doing some kind of review activity. Otherwise, I just don't think your students have a hope. Because not only, I mean, you know, I hate to say it, people, but your English lesson probably isn't the focus of your students' day. They in school, they've got other topics, they've got other subjects, they've got other stuff going on. So you have to make time for review.
And actually, it's a great point. They have other interests than the language they learn, and we can use it. And another technique will be to get physical and try to appeal to their interests and their phones, technologies, different kind of materials. Don't bring the course book only. Don't bring your Google Classroom, for instance, as we use in our school, and try to bring some variety and diversity of materials, but at the same time, don't bring too much new material. Let it be different kinds of materials on the same topic. And then, yes, it helps and it works and it's got research behind it. So, yeah, just try.
It's a good point. I mean, I wrote down on my notes expectations versus reality. And I know that a lot of teachers are under pressure to get their students to like pass exams and get to a certain level. But I think in some instances, there has to be a bit of acceptance as well. Like, maybe your students aren't going to get to that level. Don't try and throw everything at them. Explore a few concepts deeper to give them a solid foundation rather than throwing everything at them and seeing what sticks and hoping for the best. Because I really don't think your students are going to get very far with that, and I think you're setting them up for failure.
Oh, absolutely. And as I've said before, yes, working memory will not grow bigger. It will not shrink. It will remain the same. But still, different students have different gifts. They have different abilities, and their working memory capacity will be different. And if you have somebody who's gifted and remembers things instantly, it doesn't guarantee that the other student will do the same thing. And it doesn't mean that the other student has some special needs. Because a lot of teachers, when they notice some difficulty, they jump into conclusions and start, diagnosing their students with special needs, ADHD or dyslexia. But sometimes none of it is true. It's just their working memory and they have their own pace and they need their own time. They need to take some time to learn things. And we should be kind to them. Yes, I know it's hard to be kind to one's students, but we need to understand how difficult it might be and try to sometimes just give them, a good joke, a game instead of more material.
Yeah, put yourself in their position. Especially if you, like a lot of teachers I talk to say they don't see the point of learning English, they're unmotivated. So again, it all comes down, like you say, appealing to the interests and getting to know them. If you don't know your students, how on earth are you going to appeal to their interests? How are you going to make the language meaningful to them? How are you going to teach them how to connect the language with whatever's already in their brain? You know, it all sort of comes down to getting to know your students. I think, like, before anything else, that is like the key aspect that teachers should be concentrating on. And I mean, I know that a lot of teachers are under pressure, like I said, for exams and stuff, but what's the point of diving in the new year or the beginning of term? Spend the first week just chilling out, getting to know them, having a laugh, forming your rapport. And then I think everything else will come a little bit easier. It's not going to solve all your problems, but things will come easier if you gain that trust and you have that relationship with them.
Oh yes, building a rapport with students, it is like 20% of your success and as a teacher. And I would say it helps building this rapport if they see that you are trying to help them, if you're trying to understand what's going on with their brain, and if you bring to the classroom not only the materials they can learn, but also techniques how they can learn. I always include a couple of exercises or a discussion on how they actually learn. I ask them to share their favorite applications or their techniques, and they like it because they always learn something new, in discussions like that.
And yeah, and I think also like you generating the discussion, but then students saying, I do this, I do this. Peer recommendation is, I think, a lot more powerful than teachers saying, you should do this. If a student goes, oh, that person's doing that, and oh, that's interesting, there, I think they might be more likely to try it out. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And that's actually how we should teach them. It is not teacher-centered. It is student-centered process. And the more they learn from each other, the better this will be. And for example, the technique I used to try to teach them some difficult grammar, I ask them to teach me. I appoint students, I give them some topics, and they go to the board and they try to be the teacher and explain the material. Because if the best way to learn something is to teach somebody else, and yeah, it works. Oh, definitely.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Veronica. I really think this is an invaluable episode, a great starting point for teachers who want to sort of explore this topic a little bit more. I'm sure there's lots of stuff online. Where can people connect with you?
Oh, they can find me on LinkedIn and on Instagram. I will be very happy to answer any of your questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Veronica's details will be on the show notes. My darling, gorgeous teacher, take one thing, something, anything that resonates with you from this episode and try it out in your class, whatever it may be. Take that challenge, give your mindset a little shift, change from, that's a good idea to, I think I can to, I will to, oh, I've done it, and I'm going to let Erin know exactly how I got on. My email's in the show notes. Join my newsletter community. Email me at erin@refreshyourteaching.com if you would like me to work with you and your institution to create a tailor-made CBD session for you. If you just want to have a chat, email me at either of those addresses. Ask for advice. Complain. I don't mind. I'll listen to you. I might even reply. And as always, take care of yourself. Look after yourself. Have a peaceful couple of weeks. And share the love. Bye.
'Thank you so much for listening. This podcast is free and always will be. So if you feel like giving something back, you can do one of the following. You can subscribe to the podcast on your preferred platform. Spare a few minutes and write me a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify. Follow Everything EFL on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter and engage with me and my followers. If you would like to contact me, my email is in the show notes. Finally, and most importantly, share this episode on social media and tell your colleagues. Share the love. Bye.